Dragon's Cast takes a long view and a long price. Spoilers will be commonplace. You are at risk.
Good morning, faithful reader.
Welcome, fortunate seeker.
This is Podcast Guys Talking Erratic Errata.
Podcast Guys Talking Erratic Errata is a whirlwind reread of a practical guide to evilware.
A historian.
And a literature scholar.
Tackle the big questions about one of the greatest novels of the age, such as...
Is Black a fairy?
Is Wakesa a fairy?
Whoa, that's a slur. You're cancelled.
Of course I don't step on people's throats using my own heels. Have you seen how gorgeous these boots are? I'm not getting blood on these beauties. It takes at least two princes to get the right amount of skin, and Duke leather just isn't the same. Dread Emperor Nihilus I, the Tanner.
Isn't Abigail the Fox the Tanner?
Yeah, but that's a name, not an epithet. Like a surname. Although maybe, who knows? I guess we don't know the provenance of her clothing.
If it's Abigail the Fox who's a tanner, then Nihilus the Tanner is actually a fox.
Okay.
I've just put it all together.
A fox in heels.
Fox, heels, box, knocks.
I was about to say it's probably my second favorite Dr. Seuss book.
Fox in heels and Knox in box. Fox on box on Knox in heels.
It probably should be Knox on wheels or something. You could probably actually get somewhere with that.
Yeah, listeners, parody the thing and send it in to us for our amusement. Thank you. This chapter, everyone, Catherine lights a fire. A fire has been lit, and somehow it gets really cold.
I guess, yeah, we can just summarize this entire chapter by what temperature it is, so sure.
Oh, she also drinks hot tea.
That's important, thank you. But yeah, the chapter starts in a rough place, because a lot of Kat's army was exposed to a demon of corruption, and there isn't a great way of doing anything about that, aside from rotating all of the soldiers through a hall where Apprentice is hanging out and using his magic to determine if they are corruptionated. Is that the verb? Corruptionized or not.
Like a medieval version of going through TSA?
Right, exactly. And then Catherine gives us that a dozen times, so, you know, not a lot of people, but a chunk of people, she had to pat a soldier on the back and send them to a back room where they were just unceremoniously executed.
But you did say just a dozen, which isn't so big in the scale of an army. And that's because the demon was merciful, sort of.
It's just brutal that there's just no cure, no containment, no quarantine. It's just, sorry, you were corrupt. You're dying now. The battle's over. You think you survived, and your general pats you on the back and points to a room, and somebody just puts a sword in you. Holy cow.
But the demon used a lot of the corrupted people to make itself. It makes sense in context. Read the previous chapters. And so they didn't have too many people to deal with. So really, I think the corruption demon is responsible for preventing them from having to kill corrupted soldiers.
Wow, that's a great way of looking at this. I really appreciate that you're here to provide this more positive perspective on Kat having to order 12 of her soldiers to their immediate deaths.
Well, I'm trying to be more positive about Catherine ever since I was so down on her for being a fool and trying to force her aspect in the demon zone. Like, what? You knew better. Sorry, that's not relevant to this chapter. Oh, wait, it is.
Yeah, so Hakram is okay, which is good.
Good.
There could definitely be some concern there, given that Kat notices that he came into an aspect right next to a demon.
Hakram, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay, Hakram?
Very nice. And I think Kat's right to be afraid. She tried to come into an aspect near a demon, and it went very poorly for her. And she notes that, you know, of course, that he hadn't tried to force it. It just happened to him. And I think this reveals a lot about
like how the way that aspects always should happen.
Catherine? Right. Yes. You know, the normal way, the way that everybody else does it. And it's almost as if, you know, in this moment, Catherine's noticing that, wow, turns out if you open up your soul to interfere with it, you have now opened up your soul for interference. And that's not typically a good thing, I would argue.
Oh, don't worry. See, it's not good.
Oh, never mind. Then by all means, rip open your soul near a corruption demon again. It went so well the first time.
Oh, actually, fun fact, no.
Oops.
So, I think you'll see how I got here, but when you were young, did any of your teeth come out of your head? Like, just kind of spill out of your skull?
Yeah, a lot of my teeth came out of my head.
When that happened, did you do anything to force it, or did you just kind of allow them to spill out of your skull, to use the terms that you brought up and not me, because that would be weird to say?
I mostly just let them tumble out when they were good and ready, but there were a few that I pulled out because they were getting particularly annoying.
Right, because I am in the exact same boat of, I just let it happen, and every once in a while I meet someone who, you know, how adults meet each other and say, so tell me about when your teeth came out.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I only had 2 wisdom teeth because I am superior and not wise. But when my teeth were coming out, I just let it happen. I know there's a cultural trope of I'm going to tie a string around my tooth and then to the doorknob and slam the door and it'll get pulled out, which always seems stupid because I still think it is. And there are some people who actually worked to force their teeth out, like that was beneficial. And I'm just floored.
I mean, I do understand the appeal. I am going to, you know, make this put on the internet forever, but I swallowed one of my teeth because it came out and I didn't notice.
I, meanwhile, was normal and didn't swallow any of my teeth, but instead hoarded them and have them to this day in case I ever need some extra money, because that way I can cash them in when the time comes.
Smart.
It sure is something.
How does inflation interact with teeth? I don't. What do teeth go for these days?
Well, when I was young, it was $1. And nowadays, $1 is worth... What age do teeth come out?
6-ish, maybe.
Okay, I'm going to compare values.
I was right, with 5-6.
Yeah, it's nearly $1.86.
Wow.
So I would have really lost out if I had cashed them in and not invested it.
True.
I had invested my money, you know, in, say, 2005, 2006, think how much I could have now. That's a recession joke for all the kids listening. Economy is bad. But also, if you want to make old people laugh, just say, thanks, Obama, when people talk about the economy.
That does work pretty well.
The good old days when political humor was still bad.
The good old days.
Speaking of the good old days, remember when Catherine was an arsonist?
That would be tough to forget, but...
When she accidentally set all of Summerholm on goblin fire?
Yes, I remember that.
Well, Catherine's apparently alone in an alley, and a creepy little goblin appears, just a nasty little guy, everyone's favorite Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine hoarsely orders report. Hoarsely is the way that Callowans speak Badumtish. And Robert replies to her, the munitions we had stocked in the manor went up by accident. By the time Eris's boys got in place to put it out, the place was a burnt up husk. And while I'm very appreciative of everything going on here, I just love how the report is couched in such an open lie. Just a casual falsehood in order to communicate the truth. Yeah, yeah. Spies and deniability and blah, 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 whatever.
Sure.
But I just love they're performing the act, but not putting any effort in.
Oh, no. It's not about anything other than if Robert goes too long without lying, it starts to hurt.
I mean, a goblin has biological needs.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they are lies and violence.
Pretty much.
But don't worry, the violence is coming up. But first, I have a different point to make.
Okay.
Catherine admits to herself that she gave the order out of spite, but doesn't regret it, which, yeah, Catherine doesn't regret spite.
No.
Aquia had crossed a line by meddling with demons. Yeah, Catherine. That is established as a pretty big line.
Pretty much everybody agrees that's the line, yep.
We've been scuffling with the insurgents in the insurgent region for a while now. But then when they started using dirty bombs everywhere, that was crossing a line. There are things that are not done unless you're the United States. Demons are one of them.
Yeah.
Demons are fantasy nukes.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, to be fair, radiation kind of is a force of corruption.
Yeah.
There's not a great way to make an absence joke, because by referring to any place, I would then not absence it. But anyway, Robert's getting his lies, and now he needs his violence.
Are you not with Tugrab?
Well, see, the thing about Tugrab is it comes up because Catherine ordered something of a guerrilla campaign of stabbing people and leaving them for dead in alleys, because she's a big peacekeeping force who has a local rival, and she's Calowin. And she gives Robert his orders to harry, harass, and straight up murder Aerys' people. And his reply is in Tagrebi, and it is, depending on the pronunciation of the language, of course, Hade Anulsur. So there's your Tagreb for the day. Hade Anulsur.
And we immediately get the translation for that into, you know, English. Fancy which English. Is, right, which is War of Vultures, which we get a little bit of information on. But first and foremost, pretty cool name for something, for basically anything. But the War of Vultures is more or less guerrilla warfare. It's the how the Tugareb were able to not be fully destroyed by a successful Suninke invasion. It is wells being poisoned, knights full of knives, until, to quote Catherine's description, all that was left of the enemy was a trail of corpses for the vultures. So Kat says, hey, we need to make life tough for Aerys. And he immediately is like, oh, I got you. I know exactly what we're looking for here. You want me to do a War of Vultures on them. And you know what? Robert gets it.
I am, even if comparatively weak on the stance, an avowed pacifist. However, guerrilla warfare against an invading empire is always pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Also, awful and nasty, because that is not a good place to be. It forces acts that are bad, and it is because bad things are being forced on you. Like, nasty. But it is pretty cool.
Oh, sure.
And Catherine's giving this order to Robert in a dark alley while she wields a torch and is lighting the pyres of the dead soldiers. And then it strikes me, wait, she's giving the orders to harass and murder Aerys' troops. So this is private. The pyre lighting is a private affair, probably a corruption quarantine precaution thing, maybe, I guess. But wow, the pyres are private. Take that as you will.
It could be just off to the side, no? In a more public event? It's not exactly clear, but sure. I mean, I guess it could go.
It's unclear, but with the openness, I'd feel they're alone. Also, anything with Robert is assumed to be skullduggery.
Fair.
Which is a goblin word meaning skullduggery.
Yeah.
But that's also a shame, because Catherine's putting on a pretty big event for almost no audience. It's a pretty expensive one.
Is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
All right. Well.
You get what you get.
I guess I get that. We'll just do a little word association. If something's expensive, something debt. And that gets us to a line where Catherine is speaking to those who are burning here. Tortoise's line. Tortoise's line had created the firewood. Catherine is speaking to the 12 legionaries she had to order killed, and she whispers to them, your deaths are a debt, and I will have a long price for them. I gotta say, Kat is rapidly racking up a lot of this death debt, it seems like, between these 12 and Nilin, and just, it seems like every time somebody dies near her, she has some kind of debt that she owes them.
To be fair, though, these debts are all racking up against Aerys, and Catherine does really do the absolute best at paying that kind of debt.
All right,
she extracts a long price. @gmail.com if you want to contact us. Catherine turns away. Robert falls in behind without a word. Nobody else is mentioned because they're alone.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine needs to get some sleep. And then it notes, creation wouldn't stop spinning just because I was exhausted. Interesting turn of phrase and or cosmology.
Oh, yeah.
For a moment, I'd wondered, did I misread? Is this something about, you know, she's tired and the world is spinning? But nope, creation wouldn't stop spinning. So creation spins, and that's its normal state of affairs. There are a few ways to really embrace this, but rotation.
So creation isn't a flat circle.
It could be. maybe the further you get from the center, the more you get pulled towards the side because of centrifugal force. That's a science term for all you nerds out there. I was too cool in high school to learn science. I had a lot of girlfriends and was captain of the football team.
Wow, I love that for you.
Here's a fun fact for all the listeners. I would die if I attempted to play football. And by football, it doesn't matter which one I mean. So Catherine takes a nap and then gets up. She didn't even have a bed because all the dead and dying were taking them up because they're selfish.
Mm-hmm.
She gets up and goes and enters a big, apparently, triage chamber at this point. Is sure. that it?
It? I mean, triage chamber officers. And... Yeah, and lunchroom.
So she enters the cafeteria.
Right.
And all of the tables just stop talking and they look at her like that one Renaissance painting where the people are looking like, what?
The one Renaissance painting like that?
I mean, how many paintings did the Renaissances make?
That's a good question. Probably, I don't know, a dozen or so. Painting takes a long time.
So all the tables stop and they look at her. From the sexually active band geeks to the rich stoners to the mathletes to the plastics. And speaking of which, the Gretchen Wieners of Practical Guide to Evil, Aisha Bishara, comes right up to Catherine and says, you can sit down, we'll get you some tea.
Hmm, that was nice of her.
Well, you know, Gretchen Wieners is like that. Her dad invented Hot Pockets. But you gotta admit, even if you're Catherine Foundling, she's been leading this army. She's expected. These are her officers. But she enters the room and they all stop and look at her in silence. Something... The import of what has happened has been imparted. It's imparted import. English is sure a language of all time.
It is one of them. No doubt there. Yeah, it's... Catherine is a little shaken up by this, but she also can't really tell exactly what it is that people are reacting to, which creates kind of an awkward moment. It's also... Catherine is, even now, pretty new to leadership, and this is a lot of people staring at her. It could very well just be... I'm exhausted. I don't have time to figure out what could potentially be a lot of different emotions. I got to go get some herbs, I think.
Leadership. At this point, Catherine's struggling just not to sink her ship. Am I right?
Wow. That was some powerful stuff.
As is, I hope, Praise tea. But also, I kind of assume it is. Because they're... The African teas I have tried have historically been pretty darn strong and extremely good. And I just assume Praise teas are like the African teas I've tried, because that's the comparison I have.
Sure.
And Aisha orders tea made and brought over, and hurries over to Catherine, sits her down. They exchange two lines of dialogue each before Aisha threatens to have her underling strung up if, I'm going to go with he, isn't bringing the pot over already. And that's the speed with which I would like tea. I have a cup of tea while I record, and it's empty right now. And I want some.
Oh, what a coincidence. I don't have a cup of tea, and I don't want some.
We have so much out of common.
Truly. I mean, that's what you look for in a couple of podcast hosts, you know? One who drinks tea and one who doesn't.
Well, you know, they say, opposites chat.
They do say that.
Sorry. After a sinkership, I just need to let my mind rest.
Okay. So, Catherine is checking in on all of her crew. Where's these... Resting still. Where's Archer? Nobody knows. Where's Juniper? She's taking a nap, which surprises Catherine. And Aisha elaborates, she always does that after a fight. Lets her mind rest. And while I have never been in a fight, particularly, I really vibe with the idea of a stressful situation. All right, I'm going to go sleep for a while. Not because my body's tired, not because it's night. I just, my mind needs to be done for a little bit. And you know what? Good for Juniper.
Can I make a joke for all the American liberals listening?
Yeah, I guess.
I felt that way since January 20th, 2017.
Oh, that was really good. It was really powerful stuff. Really, I mean, just incisive, you know.
Can I make a joke for everyone with sensible political views?
Sure.
Every day is agony. The world is structured to oppress us all. Why is it like this? Ba-dum-tish.
You know, I was vibing with Juniper, but now I'm just vibing with that. And I kind of miss my Juniper days.
What I miss is the will-they-won't-they drama of everybody's favorite Parian in this book, Nox.
But it's not will-they-won't-they. It's
how much have they?
Yeah, how much have they, and how many offspring has the ox produced?
Well, Catherine's connecting thoughts in her brain. Juniper can rest fine. She's not really vicey otherwise, hardly drinks, doesn't gamble. Catherine's never heard of her being involved with anyone. Now, the juicy stuff. Robert keeps insinuating that she was sleeping with either Aisha or Hakram, but then he'd also composed a 10-stanza poem, which, by the way, E.E., released the poem, we know you have it. A 10-stanza poem about how Nock had fathered half a dozen calves during our march to Callow. And first of all, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. And Robert can hardly be blamed for assuming Hakram was sleeping with Juniper just because statistically, probably. Yeah. But also, fathering half a dozen calves during the march to Callow. I don't know how long this campaign has been exactly, but all I'm saying is, Nock is a player. Cattle do not have litters.
Well, cattle don't, but maybe they... Cattle don't have litters of cattle, but maybe they do have litters of half-orc cattle.
Yeah. We should check with Nock and his herd.
Also, Catherine is discounting very plausible rumors from somebody because that same somebody did a joke and continues to beat the drum on that joke. If I discounted everything that somebody said, if they also made a joke, this podcast would not function because I couldn't listen to you. There, nothing you said, I would not be able to trust anything you're like. They're saying, you did a joke, therefore you always lie, is definitely a strange stance to take.
I agree entirely. And also, you always lie. It's not that strange a stance to take with Robert.
I mean, that's also true. One goblin always lies, one always tells the truth, and they both stab you no matter what.
Goblin A says, I'm stabbing you in the kidney. And Goblin B says, I'm not stabbing you in the kidney. You're down 2 kidneys. Speaking of stabbing, there's an orc that was apparently stabbed with a lily, or at least it's jutting out of her breastplate.
Yeah. So we find out from Aisha that...
That was a tone of voice for what's coming up.
No, this is... I was smiling when I said yeah, so it's a good thing. We find out from Aisha that what happened is Lieutenant Asta, this orc, went down for water, and a 5-year-old boy from Callow, one of the people from Marchford, came up and gave her a flower to thank Lieutenant Asta from saving his mother from the devils. And I don't know about you, but when I started reading this, I didn't sign up for very sweet, touching moments where a kid is thankful that his mom survived a horrific catastrophe, while also, you know, providing the extra layer of, this is a Callow-born Callowin who's lived his entire life in Marchford, I assume, given the age, who just gave a flower to an orc as a thank you. This is, the 15th is already making a huge impact in Callow, and also this is adorable.
Yeah, but it goes on to suggest that maybe these Callowins aren't the most Callowin Callowins.
What?
Well, all over Marchford, we are told, Callowins are pitching in to help legionaries clear debris off the streets. Half of Aisha's staff was ambushed by old women bringing them sweetbread and lamb stew. And I don't know, if we help the foreign nationals dispensing aid, aren't we just as bad as the foreign empire?
That really makes you think.
Does it?
I'm thinking right now, and you can't stop me.
So the thing about murder...
This is too small of a studio for you to say that. It's making me nervous.
The thing about murder is it leaves a lot of blood sometimes. Segue.
That is a good segue. Thank you. Aisha claims that the 15th took a stand and was bloodied for it, but they won. Now, a lot of that sentence is true. The 15th did take a stand. The 15th did survive and hold their own, and the goal was achieved, even if it wasn't by them. But bloodied feels like a massive understatement for the 15th getting absolutely mauled. Is this optimism from Aisha, or is
she... It's a typo.
Oh, it's a typo. Okay.
Yeah, the 15th took a stand and we were bodied for it.
Oh, I thought maybe you meant blondie. Like, the Callowins were giving him those weird vanilla brownies.
Double-checking something. Okay.
Oh,
no, you're right that it said blondied, but what it means is their hearts were vitrified, which makes them easy to shatter. Soon found out, had a heart of glass. Seemed like the real thing only to find. Much mistrust, love's gone behind. That's a song that Blondie did?
Oh, like the music.
Yeah, like the music Blondie.
Yeah, I don't really know much about music, so is that like classical?
I mean,
or are we back to Renaissance again?
Let me check. Heart of Glass came out in 1979. So we're talking prehistoric at this point. We're talking Carter years for non-Americans.
Well, you already gave the date for the non-Americans.
That's been what? For non-Americans, Carter was a president, a peanut farmer. He invented peanut butter.
Maybe you should explain. A president is like our king, but we pretend we vote for them.
I don't appreciate envying parliamentary systems because they are all so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But
so the thing about, you know, the 15th being bloodied is what Aisha claims here. But that is kind of swept under the rug as far as understanding how the battle went, because stories are beginning to circulate. And it's very cool to see actively how the stories change or evolve or maybe grow. Let's go with grow. It's interesting to see how they grow and how they happen so fast. This is the day after the battle, and Aisha's describing stories as circulating and existing in such a way that they have to come back in, that she has to hear them from sources. These stories that are about three villains and a pair of heroes standing between the 15th and a demon. The stories are about Captain Hockram forcing back a monster the size of a guard tower with nothing but swords and shields. And then the best line, and about Apprentice making a new sun in the sky to scour it clean. It's great. This is cool to see that there was a big fight, and the next day people are talking about one of the combatants making a new sun, and the other one's fighting something the size of a guard tower. That the legend is growing within the people who were there, and it's really cool to see. And I really like this bit that we get a little insight into the story within the story beginning.
To be fair, it's the people who were almost there. The thing growing inside the people who were there was the demon, and the chapter started with getting rid of them.
Oh yeah, you're right. My bad.
Every single one of them. Everyone corrupted has been removed from the 15th.
Uh-huh. Hey, so turns out there's other bad things that can happen.
Yeah. Apparently there are a bunch of space invaders coming down, going back and forth on 2D screen and dropping little bullets that you have to shoot. There's a group of four ghosts that mm-hmm. are chasing you when you're trying to eat all your dots. Okay. There are some monsters that are moving around underground, but they're going to turn into little ghosty things and hunt you down unless you can shoot them with your hose and make them pop.
Yep.
We are, of course, talking about the arcade chapter.
That's right. Apprentice rushes out and says something bad's going on. He's not able to speak clearly at first. He's complaining because right after a demon, this is happening. He's incredulous. And Kat demands an explanation, and he says, something's coming from Arcadia. And while we don't know a lot about that yet within the story, those of us who are rereading this, which hopefully is everybody, does know...
If not, get out, we hate you.
Okay. We do know a little bit about Arcadia, and this is real rough to be following in the footsteps of a demon. But a cool thing comes from this. Z's is not wearing his spectacles, his magic sensing spectacles. He got this one on his own. So, you know, Z's is pretty cool.
He's so cool. Not only is he not wearing his spectacles, but he's dressed all in black and wearing sunglasses. And I know this because when Catherine asks where, his fingers light up with red light and he traces a few runes in the air, muttering under his breath as they rearrange themselves on their own. And then all of a sudden he says, I've hacked into the mainframe. Sorry, where we fought it. But, you know, it's got hacking into the mainframe vibes.
Yeah, the subtext is, I've hacked into the mainframe.
And the subtext of any hacking into the mainframe is trans allegory, if the Matrix taught me anything. Also, I haven't seen the Matrix in 20 years, but I gotta say, I approve of the concept at least. And I don't like what they did with the red pill. They being ethno-nationalist,
right,
conspiracy theorist, incel demons.
So Catherine and Z's run off to investigate. We get a little bit of exposition on how Fae work. that they can only come to creation through gates. Powerful enough fairies can create those gates, or can create paths, rather. And a demon being here weakened the barrier between the two realities, between creation and Arcadia, allowing potentially something powerful enough to break through. Yep, not great. We're going to take a quick detour to comment on Catherine saying Z's has to get in better shape if he's going to be involved in the military, which, you know, I guess that's fair. But the way she says it is, he's running drills with Hockram after this. Heavens burn me if I lie. Gotta say, that's a new one and very heaven-focused.
That is very interesting, but also, I was not ready for the Arcadia arc to begin this early.
I do remember it
started with like a blast of winter in the city, so if that happens...
We'll keep our eye on it.
We'll keep an eye out for more Arcadia references.
Right.
But, yeah, it's weak. Creation is weaker now, and the border between worlds is weaker because of the demon. I think that's just interesting. Makes a lot of sense. That's fine. Reality destroying thing distorts reality.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's nifty that it weakens it in a way where the border between worlds is weaker rather than scarring it over so that natural connection no longer is, for example. Like, there are different directions you could go in a vacuum to mess things up, and this is the way it messed things up.
Yeah, I mean,
vacuum.
You could easily see it being something like the boundary is corrupted and passing through here would be very, very dangerous. But it seems to be more just the thing that is broken breaks the things around it, such as barriers. So,
or even one of the worlds is corrupted, except, you know, they're never going to fundamentally alter the world you teleport into. That would be absurd.
Uh-huh.
Twilight. So.
So, Catherine is a little worried about the Fae because she can't just pull all of her soldiers here, since some of them have to keep an eye on Eris, who might backstab them at any moment. And as she goes down this rabbit hole of, Eris is the problem here, I have to be able to watch her, she's awful. She then gives us a line. She says, Sometimes I understood why Black had wanted to put all of the Wasteland's nobility to the sword after the Civil War. That sentence begins with the word sometimes. Do you mind if I just put scare quotes around sometimes?
No.
Okay. Then I'm going to put scare quotes around the word sometimes and kind of like raise an eyebrow and smile sardonically.
Wow, what a sardonic smile.
That's me. Just call me Mr. Sardonic.
Are you sure you want to go with Mr.?
Yeah.
Interesting. You know that's a gendered title.
I did know that. Thank you.
Well, speaking of gender, a fairy boy thing advances through the mist? Maybe a fairy girl thing? It's unclear. The features were too fine to tell, and the long hair could have belonged to either gender, Catherine writes, tells us, thinks, imparts. You get it.
Mm-hmm.
If Fae even did gender, which I wasn't sure they did, some were supposed to be shapeshifters. And full disclosure, I think Butler gives a really good schema for understanding and discussing gender. Butler is great. But I think under a concept of both just stories and playing roles, and even stronger with performative gender theory, they probably do gender more than most anyone else. Because, like, they're Fae. They give away the game of gender. They show the performativity of gender, the acting of it, because they act their roles. And I think that's cool.
I can't find it in my heart to disagree with you.
And you know, in our society, that could also be a gendered trait.
Having a heart?
Yeah.
Wow.
Powerful stuff. Really makes you think.
You're really making me think a lot this episode.
Partyectomies are just a social construct.
Huh. Interesting. What about soulectomies?
Is this relevant?
Yeah, because it turns out this path had been torn open, and the fairy that Kat sees is pulled back into a snowstorm that's forming here, of course. And
killed, okay, this is the start of the arc.
Probably killed. And so there's this big blizzard, and then Catherine hears, well, she senses a few things. First of all, there's steel on the back of her neck. Second of all, she hears Black's voice just saying, Wakesa, this is right before Catherine and Z's had a chance to flee. Wakesa replies, she's clear, talking about Catherine, and then says, though someone took a butcher's knife to her soul. And he probably has a guess about who did. So am I wrong in reading some real sarcastic emphasis on the word someone here? Though someone took a butcher's knife to her soul.
Maybe you are. However.
With him, with, of course, Z's standing. Let me check. Right there.
Reading for this podcast, I read a little differently than I do by myself.
Mm-hmm.
When I read by myself, I mean, let's be real. In effect, I often skip long, boring descriptions. I dance through fight scenes. Reading for yourself is not necessarily the most careful reading, except where you're particularly engrossed in a particular way. We all have casualnesses. I overemphasize them here, but,
yeah. You
know. Or reading something like Mary Oliver or Tamsin Weir, I sit there in solemn reverie, worshipful, almost, as I mutter the words aloud. Well, here, I was reading carefully, in solemn reverie, muttering the words aloud.
Right.
And after Warlock says, someone took a butcher's knife to her soul, the next words are, your son? And yeah, they're asking about, there, Black is asking about whether Masego is corrupted, which we know he's not going to be, he's the main character. But in this reading, because I was too close and too careful, I was thinking, well, someone took a butcher's knife to her soul. Oh, was it your son? It's not. I just wanted to share my reading experience with all of you.
Oh,
I hope
sure.
You felt like you were there. I hope you understand me now.
But what's actually happening is Black is checking in on the corruption level of these two. He's checking in, is she clear, and then is Z's clear. And there's a moment here that is a little concerning on a couple levels. The conversation is, Wakesa, no indication there's a pause. She's clear. Black asks, your son? There was a long pause. Also clear. Warlock finally said. So something's going on there, and we don't get any other information about what in this moment.
I think he was just being careful with his child. A main character is not going to be demoned. Right? A main character is not going to be demoned, right? That's a meme format. Oh. I'm that woman from Star Trek.
Yeah. So, a long pause, which Black accepts. He doesn't double check. He doesn't question the long pause here in this moment. He just moves on and is willing to trust his friend despite hesitation. And unfortunately, we now have to take a long pause in the vein of about a week, because that's all the time we have for today.
Aw. Ah, well, join us next week on Podcast Guys Talking Erratic Errata as we discuss
a pronouncement,
a promotion,
and pride.
Oh, okay. You're uncancelled now.
Oh, thank you. And remember, wade in their rainbows.
Wait, no, I don't. Podcast Guys Talking Erratic Errata is a fan-made podcast discussing Erratic Errata as a practical guide to evil. Check out the full serial at practicalguidetoevil.wordpress.com. Intro music for this episode was The Cradle of Your Soul by Lemon Music Studio. Record Scratch was Record Scratch by Pixabay. Music for the epigraph was Happy Light Fun Celebration by Music Town. This was the music we were playing when we were talking about skinning people to make shoes. It applies. Outro music, which even now is lifting my voice to the realms of the divine, is The Price of Freedom by Good B Music. The name of the composer keeps changing, but same person. The music is provided by the generous license of pixabay.com/music. Go and support all the artists who make this work possible by providing their stories and sounds free of charge. If you'd like to support this podcast, follow us on the bad platform at The Long Price. Do you have questions, comments, or contributions? Are you overwhelmed by the urge to correct our errors? Email us at thelongprice@gmail.com. If you'd like to materially support our work, find our Patreon at patreon.com/pgtee. Join the ranks of our patrons and be called by name, receive personalized stories and art, and get a number of other things on there, but I don't think there's anything new this week. You can double check, but I really don't. We implore you, don't consider joining unless you're already supporting all the artists who make this possible. Special thanks to our patron and villainous hero, Gray, our patron and Liege, always the claimant, never the named, our patron and Guardian of the Fade Knight, our patron and mentor, the traveling teacher, our patron and dear friend, Aaron, our patron and inspiration, the hopeful romantic, as well as the hordes of cattle below. Next week, Chapter 34, Lesson.